Welcome back to another episode of Sick, I Swear. I'm your host, Caitlin Rohde, and today I am joined by my guest from across the pond, Katie.
Hello.
I found her on TikTok, and I'm so excited that the internet has created a community to connect, and it just goes to show the power of it. Let's take it from the top. Let me hear about your journey, what you're all about. Let's get into it.
I'm Katie. I post TikToks about chronic illness. I'm also a second year law student at university, and I
You
also,
are?
yeah, I do that like on top of the non-profit stuff.
Girl, how do you? Okay, keep going.
yeah, I'm also the director of a non-profit called Chronic Youth, and we support patients aged between 0 and 30, along with like their family and friends that are living with chronic and long-term health issues. And it's all very new and exciting, but yeah.
I know, I looked on your page, I'm like, oh my gosh, we need more of that. And it's so honorable and admirable that you're starting that and doing that,
Thank
because
you.
especially being young, how old are you?
I just turned 20 like last week.
You just turned 20. Okay, well, happy late birthday.
Thank you. But I have POTS and IST, which are two types of dysautonomia, along with FND and non-epileptic attack disorder, and currently being tested for gastro issues, which they think could be gastroparesis. But we're not sure on that one yet, but it's definitely been a journey. It's definitely been a journey.
Yeah, that's what chronic illness is. There's nothing less than a journey when it comes to that. Okay, so
100%.
there's some diagnoses that I have never heard about. Let's start with the POTS. When did that kind of all come about for you?
So the first diagnosis I got was FND, which is a neurological disorder.
Okay.
But for a long time, my POTS started like a couple years later, but I brushed it off for a long time because I thought it was just related to that. And I'd spoken to my like neuro team about it, and they were like, "Oh, it's fine. It's all the same thing. Like it's all good. They're all connected. They don't really know much about FND yet. Like they're working on it, but there's not like a clear set of symptoms. It kind of affects everything." So they were like, "It's probably just to do with that." But then I started having like some real big problems with it. So it started with just the heart rate jumps and feeling like a lot more dizzy. But I was having very like severe symptoms from my other conditions at that point. So I kind of just was like, "Yeah, they're right. It's totally fine." But then there was one day that it just got like so much worse. Like I just stood up that morning and I just like, it kind of just hit me like a truck. Like it had been there, but it had been manageable. And this day I remember walking, I was at school, I'd like made myself go in, and I remember walking down to like the medical room, which I was in a lot already, but she was like, "You look white as a sheet." And even though I am incredibly pale, she was like, "No, something is not right." Like it just one day it just got so much worse. And from that point, I don't think it really got any better. I can't remember if that was when I was year 12 or year 13. So I must have been like 17, 18 at that point when it got like a lot worse. But yeah, and then I didn't receive my diagnosis of POTS until January of this year.
Okay, so it's a newer one. It's
Yeah.
newer for me too. So
Really?
the POTS is one of your last diagnoses then.
Yeah.
Okay. So
My one was recent, yeah.
you had everything prior to the POTS, and the POTS kind of just
Just jumped
cherry
on
on the
there.
top.
Yeah.
What were your symptoms?
So at the start, it did start with like, I just felt really dizzy, and like I felt like my heart was beating quite fast, but it wasn't anything crazy. Like it was like at the beginning, I just felt really dizzy, even more exhausted than I already was. Like I was just like having tingling feeling in my hands and my legs, things like that, and feeling really faint when I stood up. But again, none of this was like particularly new for me because I'd already had similar symptoms from like my neurological condition. So it was kind of all a bit like, "Ah, it's okay." But when it got worse, it did start to affect like everything. So for a long time, we thought that my digestion problems and like vomiting and things like that was due to my POTS, because POTS affects your autonomic nervous system. So anything that that controls can basically, the regulation of that goes out the window and just decides to do its own thing. So we thought for a long time it was that, but it really does affect everything. So weird.
Well, yeah, I mean it's a nervous system disorder, so that and the nervous system is the key to the body. So when that is off, everything is off, and so we know. So you had a specific moment where it was like, oh my God, there's something not right. Because that was the same with me. It was kind of like a slow burn, and then it was one day
It
everything
got a lot
got
worse.
it turned real quick. And I was just having like really bad chest pain. I was like,
Oh,
this
yeah, it's a
literally
lot
feels like a
worse.
heart attack. Like, what is happening? And I went into the ER, and they're basically like, you're anxious. Like, here's a hydroxyzine and buy with it. And I mean, I don't know, you're in a different country. I don't know how like the healthcare system works over there. Over here,
Amazing, apparently.
there's a lot of dismissive doctors, especially when it comes to like being chronically ill in the ER too. They don't know how to handle us. They don't know how to treat us. And so do you feel like there's medical gaslighting over there?
100%.
Okay.
It's definitely a massive issue over here as well. Like when I so with my FND, when that started, I didn't necessarily like when my POTS symptoms started, because of my previous experience with like going to the hospital for like my FND and stuff, it was very similar in terms of like the you'll be fine, you're just anxious, da 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 da. Like that whole thing had already started, so it was very much drilled into my head that if I went, I wasn't gonna get any help. And I just it was almost I would just deal with the symptoms that I was having, even if they were new and scary. I would just deal with them outside of hospital and just try and work out like if there was anything I can do, because I just like going to A&E here, which is like your emergency room, is just it's hours and hours and hours of waiting, and it's you don't get anything massive at the other end. It will most likely you'll just be told it's anxiety and be sent home. So I went to I'd first brought it up with my neurologist, and I was like, I'm having these symptoms and I feel really dizzy and I feel like this, and she was like, it's all to do with that. So I was like, okay. It didn't stop, but I could only see my neurologist like twice a year at most because of waiting lists and all of this. So I went back to my GP, which is like the first point of call, and I was consistently told by mainly one doctor that it was anxiety and that it was just like stress and all this. And I was like, but I don't necessarily feel stressed. Like I'm okay. Like it's not stress, because I have had panic attacks and anxiety attacks as a problem in the past. So especially for me, having that on kind of like my diagnosis sheet already
They take it and run with
definitely
it.
made things a lot more difficult. And yeah, so I was consistently told it was just to do with that, put on like antidepressants and different things, and just told to be like mindfulness and all that. I've been referred to therapy like multiple times, and I was like, no, like I have panic attacks, I have anxiety attacks, and this is different. Like I know it's different. And I think I just knew deep down that something wasn't right. And like when you're told consistently for years that it's in your head or it's anxiety, it can really start to like make you question whether it is, and like whether you're crazy and whether this. And that was definitely something I struggled with a lot. Like I started to genuinely think I was losing my mind and that like I was just going completely insane. But it was like having heart attack symptoms like every day. And it was really bad. Like there was a moment for me where I was in a classroom and I think I was 17. And I was writing, like I was just leaning over my book, writing, and the posture change from that to sitting up caused my heart rate to go through the roof. Like it was insane. And I think in that moment I was like, okay, this is not right at all. Like I'd noticed it was only when I was standing up, and I'd noticed different triggers and things like that. And I tried to explain this to the doctors. I was like, when I stand up, this happens. When I lie down, it recovers. It takes a while, but it's fine. And like it kind of settles down. But the second I go back up again, my body can't do it. And they were still like, it's just anxiety. I was like, no.
I mean, I don't know if that makes me feel better that it's not just like an American problem or worse for the chronically ill community that that's just something that we have to deal with and a challenge that we have to face because I run into so many people where it's just anxiety. Like it's really defeating and frustrating. Did it so it kind of did make you question yourself a little bit when you're
Yeah.
I mean you're told for how many
Yeah, like
years that
100%. Like I started to genuinely think like I was going insane. Like I was like, there is something wrong with me and nobody is listening to me at all. And the thing is as well with POTS, when you only have like a limited amount of energy and your body is working so hard every time you stand up when you're not like receiving treatment and things like that. Like I was still trying to go into school, I was still trying to do all these things, and I was pushing my body to its absolute like breaking point multiple times a day, where I was just like, then it was like fainting, things like that. Because like when you're pushing yourself so much, it just makes it worse, because then your body's fatigued. And it's not like you're building up in a slow and steady way. It's just you're literally pushing yourself at 150% every single day because nobody is listening to you. And when doctors are telling you there's nothing wrong, you believe them. But I think I learned very quickly that I couldn't necessarily trust the first opinion.
And that's on self-advocacy, baby.
Yeah, 100%.
Which I just talked about that on a previous episode, how that is the absolute, you need to have self-advocacy in order to get through
Yeah.
this. And was it something hard for you to build? Like, were you somebody who kind of just went with what people said as you were younger,
Yeah.
and this is something that really
I was,
changed.
yeah, 100%. I was a very, very shy kid. Like, I would not speak up for myself. People would treat me incredibly badly, and I'd be like, it's okay, don't worry. Like, we'll just avoid conflict. It's
I deserve
fine.
it.
Exactly. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. So when it came to standing up against doctors who were so convinced that it was a mental health problem, or it was anxiety, or it was this, like I found it really, really difficult. And especially as I was like, I was quite like weak, like I was really unwell. And trying to like advocate for yourself where you're in a position where like you are so unwell is really difficult. I mean, it's hard enough normally, but when you've been left to like struggle and suffer for years, you start to get like very, very worn down by the whole thing. And I'm very grateful for people like my mum, who used to come to appointments with me and be like, no, something's happening. And like it wasn't just me that thought something was wrong. Like I had so many people that were like, this is not anxiety, this is not right. And something else is going on. So I think that definitely helped me, and I'm a lot more confident now, especially when it comes to like going through my gastro issues now. Like I've definitely started to stand up for myself a bit more, even with my POTS diagnosis later on. I was like, nope, something is wrong, we're gonna sort this out. But I definitely struggled a lot at the start and was just like, I can't do it.
Yeah, that's something we definitely have in common. And it takes
Yeah.
so much strength and resilience to stand up for yourself, especially when you feel like absolute garbage. And
Exactly.
that's what people don't see. Like it's the energy is 150% more than what a normal person is. And
Yeah.
that just then exhausts you more. And all you're doing is trying to get the right care and for people to believe you. And
Exactly.
it's
It's
wild
like,
out
why
there.
do I have to fight so hard for you to believe me that something's actually going on? Like, I'm the one that's living in this body. I know what my normal is, and someone once said to me that like I was the expert in my own condition, because a lot of conditions like POTS and FND and a lot of things that I have are very under-researched and newer in terms of like medicine. Like they're not new conditions, they haven't just popped up, but in terms of the research behind them, there's a lot less. So I kind of was the expert in my condition. Like I've always had to explain like what POTS is to doctors or what FND is and non-epileptic seizures and things like that. Like I've always had to tell people what it is, because a lot of them don't even know.
Yeah, you're the one experiencing it, and they're reading it through a textbook, if that. Like sometimes they don't
Googling
even,
it,
yeah, literally Googling it behind your computer. Like it's, yes, you are the expert on your body. And I think that that's something that hopefully will become more normalized and changed within the medical
agreed.
community. And I think there's a lot more of us now standing up for ourselves, especially our generation and us being younger and like, no, this isn't right. Did you feel kind of sick all your life?
I mean, I've always been like very, very dizzy. Like I remember being a kid and doing like PE at school, and we were playing tennis or something, and it was like probably like it wasn't even hot. It wasn't hot at all. But I was that kid that had to have like water bottles poured down their head, like the back of their neck, because they were like gonna pass out. Like I've always been like dizzy and not felt quite right. But I think it wasn't something that I really, I mean, I just kind of thought that was normal. And I think I might have had POTS for longer than I think I did. I think it just got worse and then got a lot worse. But I wasn't like born with anything. And if you get what I mean. So like I've
Totally.
definitely had some symptoms that are a bit like but yeah.
Have you had doctors say, like, it's trauma or it's something
Yeah,
that?
I had a lot of doctors say that, like, so with FND, a lot of people, I don't even know if it's a lot of people, but some people can get that from psychological trauma. Whereas for me, that's not the case. Sometimes it can start randomly. Sometimes you might, you know, someone might hit their head and then develop FND, or, you know, it's kind of like with POTS as well. Like a lot of the time, because psychological trauma can be a cause, doctors kind of think that that is the only cause and it must be that. I had a doctor that I worked with for quite a while who thought it might have been to do with me getting, I had scarlet fever when I was younger. So they thought it might be potentially something to do with that, but they weren't 100% sure, and I haven't seen him in ages, so because he got sick himself. So yeah, so it's been a bit of a mix, but we're not entirely sure why all of it started. But yeah.
Did you ever have COVID, a confirmed case of COVID?
Yeah, I had COVID in 2020 or 2021, November. I was out for about a month because my mum worked in a school and she got it. And then on the 12th day, I got it. So then I had to isolate for another 2 weeks. So I was out for like an entire month and I was like, oh.
Oh my gosh. How do you feel? Do you feel like any of this is like long haul COVID related?
I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I already had FND symptoms before COVID, and that was diagnosed just after because I was on the waiting list, but you know, everything got slowed down. But it wouldn't surprise me if it was like part of a trigger. But it was, I mean, it wasn't super quick after getting COVID that I noticed it, but you never know. I do think about it sometimes that it could be related, because I did struggle with COVID a bit. Definitely wasn't easy.
Well, no, when you're already chronically ill and then adding that on, it just takes way more effort to get over something like that.
A
And
100%,
who knows, it could have changed your body completely too. That's kind of, we're investigating that a little bit with me as well. I never had a confirmed case, but that doesn't mean that I never had it, you know, like.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like kind of so I a lot of the times before I flared, so for example, that day I spoke about when my POTS got significantly worse, I'd just been ill like the week before that, but it wasn't at a point like it was a couple years after like the lockdown and everything like that, not the pandemic, but lockdown. And I hadn't really thought that much of it. I just thought I'd like burnt myself out from working so hard for exams. But like before all of my major flares, I've had like just like a viral illness and things like that and just been unwell. So I definitely think that there is something, I think that is something to do with it, whether it was COVID or just like infections just set it off a bit more. I'm not sure, but I do think it's so interesting how something like that can just change your entire, like change your entire body and change how your body works. It's insane.
And to think about how many people that it could have affected who have really no idea that that's what it came from, too. And I mean, it's only been nearly 5 years since this happened. And so it's still very new, and we're still doing a lot of research on it. So who knows what will come of it and what we'll find out in the information that will come. But it is, yeah, it's very interesting. So I'm not very, like I said, I'm not very familiar with how like healthcare works over there. Is there insurance? How does that all work?
So we have something called the NHS, which is the National Healthcare System, and it's free, so
Okay.
it can be accessed by anyone. But it's incredibly underfunded. Like it's incredibly underfunded. So it means that doctors and nurses and all healthcare workers and stuff are underpaid significantly, and their workload is enormous, absolutely enormous. We don't have enough doctors and nurses because nobody wants to work in a system that is that broken. And it's not just letting down patients, but it's also letting down healthcare workers because they're being treated incredibly badly. Like they're being so overworked. But yeah, so it also means that the waiting lists to get in to see someone are horrifically long. Like I'm talking years sometimes.
Damn.
So we have, so the first people you go to is your GP, and you could go and speak to them, who would then send you for a referral somewhere. But even getting an appointment with your GP is a nightmare, absolute nightmare. And and it might take, a couple of those appointments. It might take a year, it might, to get even the ball rolling on it. And then that's why so many patients in the UK feel so let down, is because they go to their GP and they're like, something isn't right. I know something isn't right. GP brushes them off. They can't get anywhere further unless they go through private healthcare, which people mostly don't have private healthcare insurance here. Like it's not, unless they have it through their work, it's very uncommon, I think, for people to have that. It's also a massive privilege. And so everyone goes through the NHS, and the waiting lists are just, they are horrible. And that time, like all that time that you're on the waiting list, you're just kind of left alone to like hope that things are okay until you get to that point.
While you're not feeling well, too, and while there's things going on, I could imagine that's a very scary place to be in.
100%.
And it makes sense that if they're underpaid, overworked, and somebody comes in after waiting for a year just to see a general or whatever, if it's a year or not, that it's easier to just dismiss because there's so much
There's so many
waiting and
conditions
thing.
to get through.
Yes. Yep. Oh my gosh, that's frustrating.
100%. Like the waiting list. So for example, with gastro, actually, so I was referred. I think they were mentioning potentially getting referred last May, but they were like, we'll see how it goes. And then when I had my cardiologist in January, he was like, I'm going to send you to a gastro person. That was in January this year. My appointment wasn't supposed to be until March 2025. So I'm literally talking a couple of days into 2024.
Oh
I was
my
told it would
gosh.
be a year and 3 months to see a gastro doctor who could potentially help me. Luckily, that appointment was brought forward because they're trying to do like even more appointments, and he was amazing. But that is what it's like here. Like that whole time in between, you're just left to try and suffer and waddle through life with all of these different issues, and then hope that one day they call you up for a cancellation or this. But then not only do you have to get that appointment, after that appointment, you need to go for the tests. Getting tests done, so I'm having a gastric emptying study thing for gastroparesis, that will be months, I think, most likely. Sometimes you do get lucky, but it is very difficult. And sometimes they manage to do them beforehand if they kind of know based on your notes what you need. But a lot of the times you wait for that appointment, and then you have to wait for the next test. And then after you've had that test, you've got to wait for the next appointment, which might be again a year, to kind of get in and see them to talk about the results. It's such a slow process here, and it's so frustrating.
Wow, I didn't realize it was like that. So more of the story,
Yeah.
healthcare globally
Sucks.
sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's like I had my tilt table test in the August of 2023, and I'd had all my other tests done and that was all fine. So they knew in August that I did have POTS, and I didn't find out till January. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. So they knew that I had POTS, and they couldn't get me in for an appointment before then. So I had to wait till January to find out the answers. Yeah, so
Okay.
that was months that I could have been receiving extra help and treatment that I couldn't access because the waiting lists are far too long and no one is doing anything about it. Like, the government isn't putting in more funding. It's
I am so sorry that's your experience. That kind of puts it in perspective for me because I thought it was bad here, but it's not that bad.
But see, I think for you guys, the problem is a lot of the time is so expensive if it's not covered by insurance. And that in itself must be a massive thing. Like, we're so lucky that it is free here. And I have gone through private healthcare for some tests because the waiting lists were just too long, and it was like, I can't do it. Like, I need to know now. Yeah, and that must be really difficult, having to kind of decide like whether going to this appointment is worth it for all of the money, especially if you're only then going to be told that it's anxiety.
What's the point?
Exactly. It
Yeah,
makes you want to give up and just accept that this is how it is.
and that's I think so many people do that, and
Yeah.
they're it's really nice that there's people like us kind of fighting back on it
Yeah.
and bringing awareness to it. But there's so many people that struggle silently within it, and
Yeah.
I mean, we did for however long, and we kind of
Yeah.
just hit a point where we're like, nope, we're done with
Not
that.
happening anymore.
Nope, this is not happening.
100%.
Wow. Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. Like, months I was left without being told that I had POTS. So also, but not only was I left to struggle, I was also still thinking I was crazy for an additional 4 months. Like, I was like, I can't do it. But I actually had another experience that shows this as well. So I was diagnosed with FND officially. So I was diagnosed when I was 16, after a couple of years. But I was diagnosed by a specialist in like 2 months after I turned 17. Okay. So I had 10 more months until I turned 18. I was like having debilitating symptoms every day. It was like actually horrific, and it was really bad. And I was told that I wouldn't be put on, there's very limited treatments for FND, but I was told that I wouldn't be put on the waiting list for the children's one, like treatment, because I wouldn't make it in the next 10 months before I turned 18. So what they then had to do is wait until I turned 18 to put me on the list and backdate it 8 months. I didn't receive, so from the moment that FND was like diagnosed by a neurologist, it was like 24 months or something before I received any actual treatment. I didn't get help until I moved to university.
Jesus Christ, Katie.
Yeah. It's insane. And that whole time, I was just left to suffer by myself.
Right. And then you just spiral.
Yeah. And then you don't know what to do. And like that news for me, especially like that, finding that out, I found out that there was like no cure for this illness and limited treatment options, and that they weren't going to be able to help me for like, they weren't even going to be able to put me on a waiting list for another 10 months. And I'd waited like 11 months for that appointment in the first place. So hearing all of that after being like, okay, things are finally going to change, is like, it's so much to deal with mentally. Like how, like freshly 17, are you hearing all of this and then expected to just go to school the next day and just be like, yeah, life's fine. Like, you know, I've just found out that they can't get rid of it, but like, I mean, let's go to maths. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
Put
how are
that
you?
smile on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, that's something I think is so important, is having the mental health support for people with chronic illnesses, because I don't think people that don't have them realize the toll that it actually takes on you. Like, it's so draining having to live every single day in a body that is constantly fighting you and just doesn't want to be on your side at all. But then also trying to explain that to other people and explain what it's like when they don't get it because they don't have it is like so frustrating. And so having a space where people can come, like the community on TikTok and online and things, and meet people who have been through similar things and who do get it and who do understand, like, I think it's so important because it genuinely does save lives.
Yep, I think you said that absolutely beautifully, and we are at war with our bodies every single day, and coming and finding a community where people actually understand and actually get it. Like, regardless, like you have your support from friends and family,
Yeah.
right? That can try to understand even though they don't
They
know.
can try their best, but yeah.
Right. But having people that actually experience what you experienced,
Yeah.
and the similarities is wild, and the shared experiences that we all have, especially when it comes to the way that we're treated within the medical community. And it's really eye-opening as to how much there needs to be a big change there.
Like I thought, like before, because I was on TikTok a little bit, but I thought my experience was rare when I was going through it. And then speaking to other people and starting to do this earlier this year has really just made me realize that like my story isn't rare and it's actually very common, which is what's more concerning. And there are so many, but it's not even just mistreatment. I think a lot of it is rooted in misogyny and, you know, women being consistently let down, because I know a guy who is about the same age as me, and he'd just gone in to basically say all the symptoms I'd had, he'd had those as well. He'd ended up having those symptoms. And he was asked once about anxiety, and they said, okay, like they were like, is it stress? Are you stressed? He was like, no. And they straight off sent him for tests that I've fighted for, like fought for like a year to have. So I think that really like enraged me, because I was like obviously happy for him, but that really struck me because I was like, wow, like you can really see it. And it's obviously, it depends on the doctor and things like that, but when there is already so much evidence, seeing things like that, it's like you don't realize how prevalent it is. And women are consistently let down by the healthcare system, and you can see it in statistics and you can see it in books and research and all of this, but women are consistently let down and no one is doing anything about it. Like, it's just okay, apparently. Like,
It's fine.
it's fine. Like, I'm not just an anxious teenage girl, I actually have incurable illnesses. Like, you know?
Wow, my jaw is literally on the floor to that. Like, oh my
Yeah,
God.
very like almost identical symptoms.
Girl.
Yeah. And I first brought up my stomach problems in March 2023. I didn't get a referral to gastro until the J January when I saw my cardiologist. And then I've only just seen them last week, the day after my birthday. So it's been a year and a half. I still have no answers, and I can only eat like a meal a day, and I'm throwing up all the time and feel incredibly unwell, but they won't do anything because I have to wait. But that's just how the system is here, and that's why I think people struggle so much, is because like you're just left to kind of wonder how you're supposed to live with this. Like I now kind of just see a lot of my symptoms as just part of my daily life, because it has been a really long time. Like it has been years of this, so I'm quite used to it by now, but it's still so draining going through that process. Like going through that process multiple times as well, just as you think you've figured pretty much everything out and it's all settled down and you feel like you're finding a way to live alongside it, chronic illness will, like, another symptom will pop up, or another disorder or illness or anything, because they are all so connected and there's so many comorbid conditions and they all just want to blah. So
Knock, knock.
frustrating. I know,
Back again.
it's like life's going well and then it's like knock knock, guess who's here?
Here to haunt you some more.
Oh, I hate it.
Going through the experiences that you have gone through, especially starting at such a young age and having to bank up that advocacy and really fight for yourself, what advice would you give to other people that are just starting this or who are really struggling with how to advocate for themselves and go through this medical journey with the gaslighting?
I don't know. I think it's difficult because it's like, okay, one thing I would say is you need to be firm. Like you have to go in there and be on the defensive, like you're ready to fight. Like, you know, you need to you can't go in and be like shy and, you know what I mean? You
You're
need
on
to
the
go
front
in
lines,
there.
baby.
Exactly. You need to be like, go in there and be like, I know what is happening. Something is wrong with my body and I need someone to listen to me, because you do know your body best. You know if something doesn't feel right, and if it doesn't feel right, you deserve to be listened to, at least to have something checked out, just to see that should be all right, you know what I mean, to make sure that things are okay. I think I'd say just try and be as firm as you possibly can. Make sure you have everything documented, whether that's triggers or, you know, things that make it better when it's worse, like calendars of, you know, days, there's, you know, if there's any little patterns that are syncing up. So for POTS, for example, is it just when you're standing up or sitting down, or is it consistent like an IST? But I definitely think do that. But also another thing I'd say is make sure you build a very, very strong support system around you if you can, because it's definitely not easy. And you will need people that you can rely on to be there for when things are difficult. And sometimes you might even need those people to come with you to appointments to be like, look, I know, and she knows that something isn't right.
Having an outside perspective come in.
Yeah. It's just another voice to kind of explain what they see as well, not just what you see, but what they see. And I think that definitely, like, that's what I had with my mum, where she would come in with me and be like, this is happening, and da 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 da. And I think that definitely helps. But I would just say that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it will be okay. It's gonna be rocky for a while you get things sorted.
It's a
But you
long
do have
road.
it definitely is a long road, and I definitely don't think that you should go into this process expecting that tomorrow you're going to have an answer, because for most of us, like, the POTS average diagnosis time is like 5 years and 11 months or something. Like, it's ridiculously long, and I think that if you know something is wrong, you need to keep fighting for it, because you do know your body best. And yeah, things will be okay. It's just going to be rocky, and the grief is also okay. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be frustrated with your body that it's not working properly. And it's okay to feel like angry that other people don't have to go through it, Which I know sounds weird, but I used to be very, very angry that I was the one that it was happening to. Like, I was grateful it wasn't other people I cared about, and I would never wish that on anyone. But I used to be really angry that it was me and be like, what did I do? What did But like, you didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes bodies just don't work properly. And that's not your fault. You didn't do anything. You're absolutely fine. But yeah, I think that's what I'd say. That's a bit of a ramble, but yeah.
No, we love the rambling. We love the tangents. Yeah, so I mean, going along with the grief and the anger of like, why is it me? Why don't other people experience this? Especially when people don't understand exactly what you're going through. It definitely shapes you in a different way, in a different light. You have to be so strong to get through this. And for me personally, I know that it really built my confidence and my strength. Which I wouldn't have had otherwise, not having all my diagnoses. How do you think it's shaped your life?
I think at the start I was like very angry, frustrated, and annoyed, and I really didn't like the person that it made me become, because I like, even if it wasn't necessary, like externally, like towards myself and internally, I felt so angry and just like bitter that all of it was happening. But I think now I'm at a point where I've managed to kind of turn that into something positive and turn the anger and hurt that I felt about having my condition in something that can potentially help other people, which is obviously like posting on TikTok and founding Chronic Youth. And I think that definitely made a big difference for me, because although there are so many negative things that have happened and so many negative emotions that I've felt because of my illnesses, they've also given me so much more like empathy for other people and like a deeper understanding of my body in a sense. I don't know. But I also think that it's given me like a passion to change things, because I don't want anyone else to have to go through. I know people will, but I don't want anyone else to have to go through the process that I had and the process that other people are having now in the world. People shouldn't have to go through that. Like, it's not right, and something does need to change. And I definitely am a strong believer that, like, if you think something needs to be changed and you can't see anyone doing it, you should be doing it yourself. Like, you need to be part of the change that you want to see. And I think that's what I'm trying to do with Chronic Youth, is just kind of like change things for some people, even if I can't reach everyone. Like, as long as I can help one person, it feels like almost like it's given it a purpose. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I have body chills, dude. This is exactly like why I started the podcast as well, to get more voices out there, more community realize that we all go through very similar things.
It becomes more of a discussion, and people feel more able to share what they've been going through. Like, I felt so scared to talk about it online at the start, but the amount of messages I've had from people being like, this has really helped me, or you talking about this is something that, like, I felt like I was the only one that experienced this, you know what I mean? And I don't know, I think that if we, all of us little chronic illness people in this community, are doing something small to like push it out there a bit more, that's gonna become a massive thing, because it only takes like one person here, one person there, to start pushing something out a bit more. So hopefully everything that all of us doing within the chronic illness community will change things for future patients.
Yes,
Hopefully.
hopefully, fingers crossed. And you know what? With time, you know. But I think it's really powerful what you're doing, and
Thank you.
I really respect you, and it's so, I love looking at your content because
Thank you.
me myself, I feel less alone and I really relate to you, and I'm just like really happy that I found you. Where can we find Chronic Youth? What are the handles?
We're getting everywhere, so you might have to give me a second for this one.
Yeah, pull it
So
up.
you can find us on the internet at chronicyouth.org. That is like, that's the website, that's where like all of the stuff kind of is. But you can also find us on TikTok and Instagram at Chronic Youth UK. Yeah,
Amazing.
that's right.
And then you have another TikTok, the Chronic Illness Hub.
Yeah, that's like my personal account. I kind of started it as the idea that that would be the account, but then I decided like, no, I don't want to speak on behalf of the brand when I'm just speaking for myself. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted a space where I could feel like I wasn't kind of like working. Yeah, so that's my personal account, but it's in my bio. And yeah, chronic youth.
How do you do law school while being this ill?
It's rough. Like, it's so hard. It's genuinely so difficult. I think because a couple of years ago, it wasn't something like going off to university and moving out wasn't something that was going to be possible at that point. And I thought it was just something that would never happen. And I did start to improve and I started different treatments and stuff. Like, I was on treatments for POTS before I got my diagnosis. Like, they'd already kind of started it a bit. Not everything, but like a little bit to try and help. And that made a massive difference. So I was able to move out to uni on time. Wasn't the uni that I was expecting, but I still got to go. And it's really good for me at this uni, actually, because so one thing I really struggled with is exams, because I don't know how my body is going to be doing on a certain day, whether maybe one day it'll be fabulous and the next day it'll be absolutely horrific. But I really struggled with exams because in the ones that we I don't think you'll know what A levels are because you're not from England, but they're the exams that you do when you're 18. So the ones that choose what like university you go to, essentially, like the grades that they go off for that. We don't do coursework. It doesn't matter what you got throughout all of the other years. It's just what happens on that one day. And for me, that was really difficult because I'd pushed myself so much throughout that point. I wasn't doing well at all. I was very unwell. And so, despite the fact that I'd been getting like A stars and I'd been doing great and all of this and I've been doing fabulous in the actual exams, that one day my symptoms were horrific because I'd been pushing and pushing and pushing just to get through it. And my grades like tanked like so bad. And it did not matter what I'd done the past like 2 years. It only mattered what those exams came down to. And so this uni that I'm at now luckily only does coursework. So it's like written essays and you just do it over a period of time and you don't have to just go in on that one day and sit the exam, which is definitely really helpful for me because it takes so much of the pressure off. Like, if I'm having a bad day, I don't need to work on my assignment right now. I can leave it till I'm feeling a bit better. But I also get a lot of help. So I have like extensions, and if I can't make it to class and things like that, my attendance isn't like, if your attendance goes too low at uni, you can get kicked out. So if my attendance is too low, they're not going to kick me out for it because they're like, we understand, it's all good.
So you have accommodations.
Yeah, and that's genuinely like changed a lot for me. That made it so much better. Obviously there's a few like odd things like presentations and stuff that I have to do. I've got one in January. And you've just got to hope on those days that it's okay, kind of, or you can push through enough. But it is definitely a struggle, but luckily my hours of being in aren't too bad, so I can kind of work a little bit around like how I'm feeling, but I'm not very good at it, so I have to kind of stop myself from trying to do stuff sometimes.
Well, it's really nice that you're at least getting some accommodations for a
Yeah.
unpredictable body. Like,
Yeah.
that helps a little bit, takes a little bit of the stress off. I can't imagine
100%.
how pressured you are. What kind of law are you studying?
At the moment, it's like everything. So, this course is 3 years, but then I can choose to be like a solicitor or a barrister and stuff. But I want to go into medical law, so I can like hopefully change some stuff and advise people on what to change. It'll
I
give
become
me
more
some
obsessed
more.
with you by the minute.
But like, I definitely, it wasn't something that I originally thought I was going to be doing, but then I get the option to study it next year. So I'm like, maybe I go into that properly, and then that can be part of Chronic Youth, like trying to advocate further and speak. Because I don't just want this to be a small thing. I have big dreams. I'm Delulu. Like, I have a big plan for this. But hopefully, to be fair, my delusions have got me quite far so far. Like, I told myself I was going to start a non-profit despite having like no confidence and no experience in how to do that, and I've done
I'm so
it.
proud of you.
Thank you.
Oh my God. That's something you should be really proud of.
Thank you so much.
Seriously.
But it's definitely difficult managing uni and studying law. But I think I am very like passionate about it because I kind of know a little bit more where I want to go with it now. So
Well,
it's
and you
kind of like,
have a very personal purpose for
yeah,
it too.
exactly. But that's the same with Chronic Youth. Like, while I do a lot of work on that, like every week, it's things that people don't see that, about like projects or that, like, just like boring admin stuff that you have to do. And like, while some of that would be boring, like, I don't really want to sit there and fill out like 60 forms, but like, I know why I'm doing it, and that definitely makes a massive difference. And it like pushes me to want to work harder. Like, I find it so hard to just switch off my phone and be like, no, and like my laptop and be like, no, I actually can't do any more right now. Like, I do not feel good because I just like, I care so much about my little project and I love it so much.
And that's how you know it's going to go far. Thank you for taking this time. I'm so freaking honored that you're here talking to me and that we connected. I love that the internet has brought this community together and that I've met you. New friend, new chronically ill baddie.
100%. No,
It's
thank you so much for having me. It's been so nice to speak to you. I love to speak to other people with like similar conditions and stuff, and
all
you're
the
so sweet.
And you're beautiful on the inside out. You have such a
Thank you.
light and you have a lot of power to you. And I can't wait to see where you go. I
I
can't wait to
cried.
see. This is the kind of support we need. Come on.
I know it is, but I'll cry. Oh my God. No, like, you're the best. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sick I Swear. As always, follow, rate, subscribe. Head over to my TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Sick I Swear Pod, as well as my website, sickiswearpod.com. Drop me a message if you want to be a part of this journey. Let me hear your experiences. Let's yap to the world. Honestly, I'll respond on any platform if you message me, but on my website, there is a specific place to drop a message. And follow Katie, the Chronic Illness Hub on TikTok, Chronic Youth UK on Instagram, and her website is chronicyouth.org. I am so excited to see all the things she does. She is such a voice. I'm so inspired by her, and I love her so much. And yeah, we'll talk later. I love you guys.